So this is a very contained, controlled science, which is why the public is not being informed. They're weaponizing it. Are they worried about Russia and China? Well, I don't think that way anymore since I've taken this journey. I think it's more of that our politics and political situations in the earth are more about class than nations, nation states. It seems that the elites of China and Russia and the United States and UK and Saudi Arabia and maybe even Iran are all in some sort of collusion, much as the Manhattan Project was. There was a lot of give and take back and forth because scientists really see themselves as international citizens. They don't really view themselves as
I would say that's more
nation-based
true.
patriots. So I tend to think that they're all studying this and coming up with things. But of course, the U.S., being the youngest nation of most nations, is always a brat and always kind of takes off on its own and maybe pushes the others to work harder. Maybe there's a reason. It's a sort of Jacob and Esau, Cain and Abel kind of situation with the competition among nations. But that's basically how it works to get the energy down here. And once you've got it down here, now you can start steering it. Like the weather systems, they take that weather off the South Pacific. As it's a moisture system, it'll come in naturally. It is natural. There's very little natural weather anymore, by the way, or natural clouds. They're all plasma clouds that I see, and I live in the Pacific Northwest.
How do you tell if it's plasma or natural? How can you
Well,
see that?
yeah, you train yourself to be able to see. On the one hand, we're back in our perceptions, right? I mean, in a way, our media-rich environment and civilization has completely cut us off from our own confidence in our perceptions. So now we look at the news to tell us what's going on around us.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yes, we've been mediated, as Marshall McLuhan put it, way long time ago when I was a young woman. So now I'm back to my perceptions, and now I'm training my perceptions because this is a chemical sky now. This is not a natural sky of just water condensation, particles with a little bit of pollution going skyward that are involved in acid rain, etc. The old way that we thought of things. Now we're being doused and inundated by chemistry every single day. And it's impossible to get, for example, it's impossible to get the formula for the JP-8 fuel of commercial and military jets. They use pretty much the same fuel, though the smaller jets may have something a little more to take them at higher altitudes. But it's impossible to get because it's classified. It's classified.
Well, they classify everything, right? I mean, so it's so difficult. And we are seeing, that's where the perception is really important. We are seeing things go awry medically in our own bodies. The autism rate is high, the cancer rate's higher it's ever been. I mean, we're seeing all this stuff, but yet the media wants to tell you that everything's okay. And no, you got to look at your perception has to be, you have to have critical thinking skills more than that. And so this is really great for people to be able to. I love listening to you. Sometimes I'm forgetting my questions because I'm just sitting there listening. But you were talking about Clifford, right? The scientist that now he compared the regular condensation. He tracked that and what was in that compared to what was in a chemtrail, and he could scientifically see what those differences were.
Yes, but after he had been able to collect precipitation and what was in his HEPA filter, and analyze it. And we're talking a shoestring budget here. This is not a NASA, you know, well-funded scientist. This is a guy who used to work for the DOD and the Bureau of Land Management and left, as many scientists are. We have a few really ex-NASA people in our movement who are just fed up with the need-to-know basis, the compartmentalization, the secrets, the lies, the deception. And Clifford was able to slowly see that, oh, yeah, this is not ice crystal condensation. This is because he knew the behavior, first of all, what he's seeing. You have a long trail. I remember a biologist, a great guy in California, compared it at the Shasta County meeting to if I take a walk on a very cold day and you know the condensation of my breath is going out, if it's true that this is just a condensation trail, then you're going to see my breath for the last 2 miles I walked, and that's ridiculous. If it's water vapor, it's going to just dissipate within 30 seconds from a jet at 30,000 feet, 35,000, 40,000. But if it's chemicals, and the fuel is made of chemicals, I mean, what is the problem here? All the fuel is spewing out chemicals, and we know approximately what's in it, barium, strontium, aluminum, etc., then you're going to have that in the atmosphere, and it's not going to dissipate. It's going to fall because it has nanoparticles in it, and gravity holds sway, and down it comes. But it's in the air, and it's tiny, and we're breathing it in. It goes in our lungs, then it goes in our blood, then it goes easily past the blood-brain barrier. And lo and behold, we're at the statistics of increase in Alzheimer's and autism that's going through the roof.
Yes,
so,
it is.
I mean, this is not making it up and, gee, Lonnie, you're not a scientist. I'm just thinking my way through this like anybody can if you take the time.
Yeah, and they found that I had a scientist on, Dr. Boyd Haley, that actually was able to pull the mercury out and other heavy metals out of our brain in a way that's healthy, because if you just do that and it goes through your system, it can be very damaging. And so he created a compound reversing autism, all sorts of stuff. So they know that that in our brain is causing so many of these problems. And so it's so important for us to understand this. Now, the space fence term, the coin, that was actually coined by Lockheed Martin or the powers that be. This isn't something you came up with. This is the real term for what they're calling it. How far along in this process are they? Are the, all the satellites, the 2,000 or so that's going to be going up over the next couple of years, is that part of this whole deal?
Yes. It's a done deal, Sarah. We're under it now. The AI is functioning. The only thing missing in my mind is the 5G. And the 5G is millimeter wave technology. And this to me is not the cherry on the cake. This is the linchpin. And this linchpin will avail them. See, I've been wondering ever since I read Ray Kurzweil, his thoughts on singularity, which, and I should explain that for listeners, singularity and transhumanism are quite similar. They're about the enhancement of the human being to perhaps something which will be not so human anymore. So we have the cyborg. We have, I think her name is Sophia, who's now a citizen of Saudi Arabia. This sort of terrible looking, awful thing.
It's golem. A robot, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's a.
Well, I think it's more like a golem, because I'm not sure. You know, there's the old Newtonian thing: nature abhors a vacuum. I'm not really sure how things work out when you make images of human beings and you've studied their brain for many, many years and devoted billions of dollars to piecemealing their brain into a machine. not really sure what that is anymore. So I leave that question open. But we have this going on right now. This is one picture of transhumanism. But the larger picture that was confounding me was, well, gosh, okay, they want to change the human being. So that's going to take, is that going to take generations? But the Ebner effect says that in one generation, if you have electromagnetics, you can change the entire generation just in one generation.
And that's true based on some studies they've done with rats and things where they have less babies or more babies. They're messier or cleaner. There's all these different attributes.
That's right. And that's what I was plagued by. And now that I understand how the nanoparticles, we're not just breathing in conductive metals, we're breathing in sensors, what they call MEMS, GEMS, and NEMS, that are loosed by the trillions for space situational awareness, SSA. They loose it up in the stratosphere. Down they come, we breathe them in, into our brain they go. Then there's microprocessors in the sensors, of course, but just microprocessors like little nanobots. We're breathing those in as well. They're alive in us in their way.
Please continue with that, but the nanobots, how do you know they're actually working little computers? Because I still have a problem seeing at that level an actual functioning computer. Do you know that they're capable of getting it to the, and I could see it being possible if you can work on a nanoscale, but
yes,
have you found the evidence to show that these little suckers can actually work like a processor?
There's even videos of them working, and they look like kind of paramecium. When I was in biology in college, I had my little petri dishes of paramecium, and I was cutting them in half and having them grow again and that sort of thing. Very fun. And these have little sensors on them. There's videos of them, Sarah. I can send you a few.
Excellent. I'd like to get a video and a couple pictures that I can put into this video.
Okay, I'll come up with that. So we've got the microprocessors in us. These can be remotely, and the sensors are remotely communicated with. That means at some sort of center, maybe a guy on a laptop in Denver or in Colorado Springs. That's his job. He keeps track of the so-called this kind of sensor, this kind of microprocessor, and another guy keeps track of others. And then you have the pathogens. And the Morgellons pathogen is not just biological. That's really important to know. Clifford Carnicom has determined that we have all breathed them in. We all have them in us, or it can't be just his sampling of 200 or so people from 10 years ago. We've this is one atmosphere we are all breathing, and it is up to in our brain, and these two can be remotely triggered and communicated with. So meanwhile, the military industrial intelligence complex worker bees, or hive mind out there that work for them, are gathering data from our bodies and minds, our brains, from these little nanobots that are in us in the trillions. This is how they're going to do transhumanism in one generation. They've electrified, they've sold us these military devices known as iPhones, these mobile phones. We got that from them. We got the television from them. We got the computer from them. We got all our technology from the military, and they are all dual use, which means they're civilian and military. So now they're going to use these devices along with their towers and their antennas. And we now have antennas that are flying through the air and are just nano-sized. I'm recommending to people, get your flashlight out, go out on a really dark night, and just turn it on and see what you see in the beam. See what you see. And that's how they're going to do the transhumanism. And what kind of transhumanism are they hoping to make? Well, eventually, very much a cyborg human being. I'm not sure that we will be human anymore, because now, of course, the great advantage of living in an era like this, where we're fighting for our, not just our lives, but our own identity as human beings, is that you now must really contemplate what being human is and what it isn't, and really make a commitment to being human, or not. I mean, that is our choice.
Well, I think they're getting pretty close to being able to create different parts for your body. Well, they already have. But and
yes,
different parts that mesh with your body and things that are bigger, you know, not just the nano. Now, when it comes to your whole field, because you're really out there at the forefront, you know, tackling things that average people just really don't think about, what kind of reaction do you get from people?
Well, first of all, I'm hunkered down here in the Pacific Northwest in my little town, where I used to be pretty much a community leader. And now no one wants to talk to me. So this is how it is. I miss bad
news. The sheep stuff.
Now.
Because even if you have these interesting concepts and whatever, but why would someone not want to talk to you? They don't want to be associated with you because they can't look like they're away from the herd. To me, that's herd mentality. Because I don't care. If I don't believe or agree everything you say, so what? You're still really interesting to listen to. And you never know who the science, I mean, I don't know. Let's figure this out. But it's that herd mentality that just kicks your ass when you're out there in front like you are. And
yes.
I'm so sorry that the whole city is like that, because that's the example of human beings just being so sheep-minded. Because it doesn't, who cares if you're thinking about creative different ideas? Okay, so what else?
But
keep going.
Sarah, you're unusual. Come on now. You're a thinker. You think your way through things. Most people feel their way through things. They, do I like it? Do I not like it? Does it make me feel good? Does it not make me feel good? That's the litmus. That's the litmus in America now among the what I call the liberals. And I'm in a very liberal town. And
they're
some
worse
good things to
for
that.
Some reason. But keep
say it
going.
Again.
They're worse for some reason.
Oh, yes, they are, because they've been conditioned. They've been conditioned and programmed. I mean, I think we're seeing that with the whole Democratic National Party thing. So that's one thing. All right. I go to give talks. I just got back from Santa Cruz. I was invited down there. The very nice people paid my plane fare, bought me a fantastic birthday dinner, took royal care of me, worshiped the ground I walk on. I'm a total rock star. And I don't know how much stays when I leave. They buy the book. And I hope they read the book. And I always tell them very delicately, just read a little bit. Don't knock yourself out. You don't have to read every footnote. Because we have been, as a nation, we've been just annihilated by a school system that teaches you that reading is painful. And you don't retain anything anyway. I'd rather watch the video. I'd rather see the movie than read the book that the movie is from. I'd rather have, see some, just go into Alpha Wave and watch someone pour it into my brain than do the work that reading requires. I'm a Rudolf Steiner person. I mean, you have to really use your brain if you're going to read Rudolf Steiner in translation on top of it. So I love using my brain. I have not been programmed and conditioned to just feel my way through life. I believe in intellect. I believe in ideas, that they're powerful. I don't know there's anything in civilization that didn't come from an idea. And so that's why I fight so hard when I do visit people to give them some confidence that you can do this. You can. We are a citizens' movement, whether they make fun of us with a CIA term called conspiracy theory or not. Doesn't matter. That's what the CIA does best. It sneers and smirks. I've
it
met
does.
Some of those.
Yeah, it does.
So, we're on our own. But we're on the right side. We're on the side of truth, justice, and the real American way. We're the ones that are trying to salvage and put in its place this elitism that has dominated humanity for centuries, if not millennia. And it's our turn to take the fight up. And you know, come on. And that's kind of how I do it with the people that are willing to listen. I certainly have a lot of Facebook people. A lot of people follow me on the internet. And then I see people when I go to give a talk here and there. And that's how I do it. Otherwise, I'm just here writing, hunkered over my computer. And, you know, taking myself out for a nice dinner once in a while because I have no one to have dinner with.
have dinner. Sometimes that might be okay. You know, with all the stuff I'm bombarded with, I'm like, I just kind of want to be left alone every so often.
Well, there is a price, isn't there, for being known? There's a price. And I'm a little bit more known because this book is really going through the roof. It's too many emails, and I want to respond to everyone. Too much Facebook activity. I'm like 700 things behind now because I took a trip out of town. But I'm happy. There has been growth in this movement, Sarah. There has been. I am seeing more people waking up to some degree, and I'm very encouraged by that.
Well, more people are leaving the herd and saying and having the confidence to question things and look into different ways of thinking, and you know, and when I said the left is worse, that liberal left, there is a tangent on the other side that's pretty bad too.
Yes.
If you criticize Trump or whatever, or if you even point out anything bad, then they get mad and unsubscribe, and I'm never coming back. So but there seems to be with more of us coming out and saying, it's okay to question things. It's okay. You don't have to be right all the time, but we got to figure it out. You know, there is no roadmap and you can leave the herd. You're safe. We're creating another herd that's going in another direction that's making it safer for people, I think. And I think you're seeing it. The timing is really right. The internet has done a lot, opened up. Now I'm really censored. My show is. I can just tell. I mean, it's really obvious.
Yeah.
And I have actually facts. I have a show that says this is what censorship looks like. And I covered mine and my stats and then other things that I saw. I haven't really analyzed it lately, but it's obvious to me. But besides that, at least we have an outlet to be able to communicate with each other and give people the confidence that it's okay to look at these other things. And you don't have to believe it. And it's okay still to have your brain go there and think about it. Because then you might open your mind to seeing the world a little differently.
Yes. You know? Yes, and to counter the conditioning. I mean, I'm serious that, you know, I had a pretty good education in New York when I was a kid. And I have watched it go down the tubes. I was a high school teacher for years. I was a Waldorf teacher for years. People finally bring their children to Waldorf and pay this gigantic tuition because they want their children to really have a brain when they finally come out the other end of the toothpaste tube of the education. And I'm seeing people graduate from college who can't think their way through a paper bag.
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
They don't know the difference between thinking and feeling. That's a really serious thing. And this adulation of feeling overthinking, what they're thinking of is the abstracts they were taught in the name of education, but which had no substance whatsoever and were just these ghost-like filaments called abstracts of who won what battle and when this happened and here's this chemical formula. There was no story behind it. There was no meaning behind it. And I really am so sad, and I apologize to all students who had teachers like that, but then if they hadn't had those teachers, the ones like me, we don't last in these schools.
No.
Believe me, I know. We have to leave because we are not allowed to really think and be free in what we're teaching and how we're teaching it. We've got to teach to the test now.
Yeah, yeah, it's too
very
bad.
Hard.
You know, I'm starting to think that homeschooling is really the way to go. When I started, I'm like, I'd never be able to homeschool my kids. And now I'm like, gosh, my kids are all graduating, but they're much more open because they get to hear me talk and my husband talk about stuff like this. So it's helpful. but
Yes.
they're feeling a little alienated at times at school. But I can see the whole homeschool, why they do that. You know, the problem
Yes.
is that you really got to expose them. You know, if you're just exposed to me, it's, I don't know if that's a good thing, because you got to work in the real world. So
Yeah.
how do you counteract that and make sure your kids have a good education, but not isolate them from the real world, you know? And so, and I'm sure, I just started thinking about it, so I'm not an expert, and I'm sure there are a lot of people, and I know there are a lot of people who've been thinking about this. So, but it makes me realize how that homeschooling, there's something really good behind that, if you can make sure they're not isolated.
Yes, and if you haven't had the advantages of a good education or a homeschool education, it doesn't mean, oh, well, life's over, that's it, I have to be this drone. No, you just take hold of that knowledge that, yeah, what was I missing? And you begin to give yourself that, and you begin to see a growth in your ability to concentrate. This is what most people don't have, is the ability to concentrate. It's paying attention, because that alpha wave of TV watching and movie watching, it has a big back. The Chinese have this saying, the bigger the front, the bigger the back. Well, that's really true in the visual arts, because you will not be able to concentrate in beta waves. You need beta waves, baby. You know, and that's why I discipline myself very much. I'll watch a movie now and then if I can find a free one on the internet, but I will not go to movies and just see movies or documentaries, because there's a director that decided how much they want me to see and what they want me to think, hiding behind those movies and documentaries. And I'd rather read the book so that I can make my own decision about the text. I'm a big text believer, but of course, you know, I'm old school. Oh, well, what do I know?
Well, I just think the new way, which is video and stuff, it gives people the opportunity to see experts like you and to be able to ask questions and do all these things. It's opening up people to a whole new mindset, but I agree with you 100%. One of the things that I did, I had 300 students last fall at the University of Minnesota. I teach too. I'd love to keep teaching. You know, that would be great, but we'll see. Cause I like to go in to think about different stuff, you know, and, critical thinking, and really teach that and not be afraid to think about different things. But one of the things that I stick with the, you know, I got to stick with what they need to get out of the class. I'm pretty traditional that way, making sure I do a good job. But one of the things that I, do is I spend a lecture talking about listening skills, and that true listening is a skill. And because your brain can move a lot faster than somebody can talk, and that you have to discipline yourself to be able to truly listen. And it's the same thing with reading. You have to create that discipline to be able to read and concentrate. And so I do a lecture on that, on, and talking about that, and how the people that can get that discipline are going to be so much farther along than others. I think there's way more learning that happens outside of school than inside of school. So
yes,
it's just getting that discipline, which you can teach yourself that anywhere. But it takes time and patience, and it's work. It's just like working out, you know?
Yes. And if you know, being a Steiner person, Waldorf person, I have been conditioned by the idea that, and it wasn't just that, it was how I was as a child. I was an only child, and I had a whole world, and I read early, and I had immigrant grandparents I needed to translate letters for. And so I came early to the idea, wow, knowledge is really, it just opens doors. It just opens a whole world, a million worlds, as many as are in books and hidden. And Steiner once, he said it exactly how it is, that what is written in a book is like it's in a little cemetery. He said, books are little cemeteries, and your job is to resurrect the idea sleeping within the book. And that's really it. If you have the will force to bring that idea up, you can enter whole worlds. And I've always seen that. That's why I always write it when I inscribe books to people. I always say knowledge is power, because it is. And the elite masters know that. That's why they covet knowledge. They keep it to themselves. They control the patent office. They control inventors. They'll even get rid of inventors and steal inventions and hold them until the opportune time that they want to release it into the public to make money, to get more power, to whatever. But knowledge is power. Scientia est potentia. Very important.
Well, and there's historically, to control people, they control the knowledge. It just is what it is. And when the printing press came, a lot of people were nervous about books because of that very same reason.
Yes.
'Cause they know that knowledge will change the culture and they will lose control. So every single, you know, slavery through, everybody's been a slave, every type of group of person, but they've always controlled them through that. So it's just historical fact that that's
yes.
what they do. You know, it is what it is. But, you know, and I always think it's funny that we'll look at history and see that that is fact. All through history it'll happen, but in this today and now it's not happening. We can't allow, you know, it's like people have this cognitive dissonance where it happened all through history, all this fact, and they believe that, but right now it's not, you know. Well, I think it's the same.
They're waiting for the history writers to write the history. You know, and you know who our historian is the New York Times, I'm sad to say. The New York Times decides what is history and what is not history. And that's the way it's always been. I mean, that's been one of the big reasons I love history, is digging into books like Howard Zinn's, The People's History of the United States of America. I mean, Howard Zinn was able to show you, he did the Native American side. Hey, guys, there was another side to this. He does the underbelly. Well, in my Sub Rosa America series, I go even one level below and I go into the occult America. The Brotherhood's America. This country has been run by brotherhoods since day one.
Well, there's, so, go ahead.
Oh, but I was just going to say, you are so right that people want to say, oh, well, that was before. Now this is real. And, you know, it's different. It isn't different. We're living in an era in which our Vatican, our Roman Church, like in the Middle Ages, our Inquisition is this space program I'm writing about. This is it. And it connects to the vaccines. It connects to the GMOs. It connects. I mean, Sarah, we could go on and on and on as to the connections of how we are being plugged in to the very environment that will assist in transforming us in a transhumanist singularity way.
Okay, so how can people get hold of your books?
Well, they're on Amazon, Evil Amazon, and they can also write Feral House directly. Feral House published them. And I have a site, ilanafreeland.com, that they can go to just get a sense of more aspects to me, and they can order the book there. And they can see my Sub Rosa America books there as well.
When you order it from there, do you get a more profit than if you order it from Amazon or from Feral?
No, it isn't that wise of a site yet. No, I haven't figured that out yet.
That's hilarious.
I do have a donation button. That's about as far as I've gotten.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Would you stick after for a quick interview question for my Patreons?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you. Thank you.